I'm going to move on to the reading now, which this week is from Matthew 15. It's verse 29 to verse 39. And that's page 982. So it's subtitled, Jesus Feeds the 4,000. Jesus left there and went along the Sea of Galilee. Then he went up on a mountainside and sat down. Great crowds came to him, bringing the lame, the blind, the crippled, the mute, and many others, and laid them at his feet, and he healed them. The people were amazed when they saw the mute speaking, the crippled made well, the lame walking, and the blind seeing. And they praised the God of Israel. Jesus called his disciples to him and said, I have compassion for these people. They have already been with me 3 days and have nothing to eat. I do not want to send them away hungry, or they may collapse on the way. His disciples answered, Where could we get enough bread in this remote place to feed such a crowd? How many loaves do you have? Jesus asked. Seven, they replied, and a few small fish. He told the crowd to sit down on the ground. Then he took the seven loaves and the fish, and when he had given thanks, he broke them and gave them to the disciples, and they in turn to the people. They all ate and were satisfied. Afterwards, the disciples picked up seven basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. The number of those who ate was 4,000, besides women and children. After Jesus had sent the crowd away, he got into the boat and went to the vicinity of Magadan. And now I hand over. If I can untangle myself.
It's great to be here this morning, a real sense of the Lord moving amongst us. And it may be that the Lord's already spoken to you today, and maybe you would like somebody to pray with you afterwards and encourage you to do that, to seek prayer, not to take away that half-formed thought in your mind or something that's perhaps starting to take root. Just have somebody to pray over that will probably help you to establish that in your life and to move on in it. So we're thinking about the compassion of Jesus, and we've been thinking, haven't we, about that word splachnitsomai. They're all fluent in Greek here now. If you've been away for a couple of weeks, you'll need to do that refresher course in your New Testament Greek. But splachnitsomai is a very deep, visceral response to the needs of others. And as we were in worship, I thought to help you to connect with that, when you love someone, whether that's your child or your spouse or a sibling, and you see them in desperate need and you can help. Do you know that feeling? They're in desperate need and you can help. You sit down, you fold your arms, think, I'll watch the telly. No, you've got to help. You can't not help. Something moves in you and you've got to help. You might have been having an argument with them. You might be really angry with them. It doesn't matter. When you see their need, your love overwhelms everything else and you have to move to their aid. And this is the sort of emotional and physical response that we've seen in Jesus as we've gone through these different passages, thinking about the compassion that Jesus has. We thought about that compassion for the sick, which despite Jesus arriving, having just heard of the death, the murder of John the Baptist, and gone to seek a quiet place, he arrives and still has compassion on the people, on those that are sick, recognizing their great need, and he reaches out and does something about it. He brings healing. We thought about it with regards to the widow, where Jesus had compassion on the widow and raised her son. There's that compassion towards the bereaved. And last time we spoke, we were talking about Pentecost, and we thought about the parable of the forgiving father and the prodigal son. And in that passage, we saw how The Holy Spirit is really God's compassion reaching out to us. It is the Holy Spirit who clothes us, who gives us the ring of authority and the sandals of the gospel of peace and sends us with that good news. And in that study, I drew out the passage that Paul spoke about clothing ourselves with compassion. So in my introduction this morning, I really wanted to underline that as we look back at Jesus, it's no good us just saying, isn't he wonderful? Isn't it amazing? What a wonderful God we got. It's great to do that. But the next step is to say, and he says, clothe yourselves with splagnitsomai. Let that be what people see of you, that you are constantly having compassion on those who are bereaved, those that are sick, and today we're thinking about those who are hungry. So we come to our passage today, the compassion of Jesus on the hungry. In this account, we've heard that Jesus has been with the people for 3 days teaching them. Now, this is at a time when most people lived, and this word is overused, but literally hand to mouth. They ate that day's food that day, and they worked that day for the next day's food. So if they've been with him for 3 days, they've probably not eaten for a good 2 days, if not all 3. So it is a pressing need. But Jesus has been teaching them and healing them. We've heard some of the things that Jesus has been doing. Giving sight to the blind, healing the lame. And that, of course, would have rung bells for those seeing it happen. They would have remembered Isaiah and his prophecy, that when the day of the Lord came, and the Lord came to Jerusalem, what would happen? The blind would see, the lame would walk, the dumb would speak. The day of the Lord had arrived. And that, of course, was supposed to be at the temple, and that people of all nations would be drawn to the temple to worship God. And what's happening? Well, on a mountain, not Mount Zion, but a mountain, is Jesus, not a temple of bricks and stones, but the place where God's kingdom has come. And they're seeing in their midst the day of the Lord enacted amongst them. So they're there at that moment when the kingdom is made known to them and they begin to see what's happening, the kingdom of heaven bursting into their experience. So Jesus has been healing and releasing people for 3 days. He must have been tired. He was human. And at the end of 3 days of doing that ministry, he must have been exhausted. And yet, at that point, his primary concern is the fact that they are hungry and are going to be sent away on their journey home. One commentator pointed out that it seems that every phase of Jesus' ministry ended with Jesus feeding people. And if you want to check this out, if you go back to the end of Jesus' ministry in Galilee, he feeds the 5,000. And then at the end of this ministry in the Decapolis and the surrounding areas, he feeds the 4,000. And then, of course, at the Last Supper, he feeds the disciples before his departure. So there is something rather special about the way that Jesus chooses to seal the end of a particular phase of his ministry with that time of, we might call, communion, eating together with his people. And his heart is to do that for these people before he leaves them. Well, I wanted to draw 3 things out of this passage so that we can apply them later. The first is, it was an immediate need. Genuine hunger is a pressing need. Have you ever actually been really hungry? If you've ever got to that point where maybe you've fasted or you've had a period where you couldn't afford to buy food, whatever it is, everything suddenly starts looking appetizing. And sometimes when you're fasting, you know, there'll be something you would never dream of eating. But so you're so hungry, suddenly it looks wonderful. Your eyes tell you it would be wonderful to eat that cardboard box. Well, people that are starving eat grass roots or tree roots. They'll dig up worms out of the ground. They'll eat anything because hunger drives you. It is a genuine and pressing need. And these people, for 3 days without food, they are certainly hungry. Jesus says that his concern for them, his particular compassion for them, is that they may collapse on the journey home. So they're not just a bit peckish. You know, this is a genuine need, that they are starving and that they may collapse and die if they collapse, because there'll be no one to help them in that remote place. So it is an immediate need. The second thing I draw out is that it's an impossible task. There is no co-op in this place. It says that it is a remote place. So it is an impossible task. There's thousands of people, no food outlets, and no online shopping. This can't be done. It can't be achieved. And the third point is that it's an irrelevant question. I know that sounds a little bit blasphemous, but Jesus says, how many loaves do you have? My answer would have been, I don't know, but it's not enough. There are 4,000 men here, let alone the women and the children, who we know eat more than the men. How many loaves have you got? Well, why on earth did Jesus ask such a stupid question? I mean, he knows that they haven't got 4,000, that's for sure. I mean, you know, it's like, let me just check. Well, we've got 7. And, you know, I think 7 is like, I think, little cobs, not French sticks. You know, we got, I can imagine somebody older than me, one pair of hands, you know, we got 7. Since you ask, you know, we've got 7. What good is that? Well, I'll unpack that a bit later, but it does seem an irrelevant question, but I don't think that it is. I think it is a relevant question. I want to point out something which may have missed your attention. In most miracles that Jesus does, he doesn't turn to other people to ask for anything. When he sees the lame person, he doesn't say, oh, hang on, has anybody got an elastic bandage? You know, has anybody got a crutch? Anybody got some plaster that I can just sort of plaster them up so they heal? When he's healing the blind, he doesn't say, oh, anybody got some glasses? You know, so you can give me a bit of a hand. But when he feeds people, he asks, what have you got? Slight exception to that might be at the wedding feast, where he did ask for some water in order to turn it into wine. But eating and drinking, they're a bit similar, aren't they? Meeting a physical need in terms of eating and drinking. And I think that might be significant. So having shared what they have, Jesus multiplies it and he meets their need. And then, and I want you to note this well, he gives the food back to the disciples. Okay, so he says, what have you got? They give him what they've got. He gives it back to the disciples to distribute to the people. So in those two ways, he first asks the disciples for what they've got. He multiplies it, then he gives it back to the disciples to distribute. So they all ate and were satisfied, and the disciples collect up 7 baskets full. In the feeding of the 5,000, we're told that, I can't remember how many baskets it was they collected, but it's a different sort of basket. It's, was it?
12,
you're right, 12. 12 baskets, but they thought to be, by the word that's used, like a little purse, like a little bum bag that you'd keep your snap in. That's what we used to call it in Leicestershire. Your tuck.
Your docky.
Yeah, all right. Your own lunch, basically. That's what the disciples... So they're a small, like, lunch box that you keep your own lunch in. Whereas this time, the seven baskets are the big picnic basket sorts of hampers type things. So they've picked up an awful lot of bread, is what they're saying. Plenty for them to eat. Okay. So let's try and apply that. Let's try and apply it first to physical hunger. We do still face hungry people today. There are people that have physical hunger in our own area. In the light of Jesus' compassion, we can't just ignore that. We can't just say, well, the poor will always be with us. You know, what can we do? Let them get on with it. And I think in the light of Jesus' pattern of feeding the hungry, we're asked an irrelevant question. What have you got? The answer is, not enough. Look at the state of our nation, at the number of people that are hungry, the number of people that need housing, the number of people that need healing. We don't have enough. We can't meet the need. But Jesus doesn't ask, have you got enough? He asks, what have you got? And he asks us to share what we have. Not to make ourselves poor whilst we make others rich, but that we share what we have. One of the most quoted Bible verses that doesn't exist is, God helps those who help themselves. Anybody heard that? You do know it is not in the Bible, don't you? It's nowhere in the Bible. The closest we might get is that Paul writes to Timothy that those that can work should work for their food. And if they don't work, they shouldn't eat. So there's a fairly clear guideline that if you're able to earn your own money to feed yourself, then that's what you should do. And you shouldn't rely on charity of others to meet that need. What's closer to the truth is that God meets the needs of others through us sharing the little that we have. So God helps others through us sharing the little that we have. That's the pattern that Jesus has taught us here. That we are to help our brother and sister. So, practical ways that we might respond to this. The first one at home. The local food bank here is called the Ely Food Bank, but it also supplies food into Soham and indeed to anyone that's in need in Burwell. I've worked with the food bank in my previous church, and I used to volunteer regularly to distribute the food. Let me just explain a little bit about how it works. It's for 3 days. So really, its primary purpose is set up for people when they're in between applying for benefits and getting them, or something changes in their benefits and they get nothing. And very often what happens is that for that period, they have no money. And for the sort of people that end up in that situation, often they don't have a savings account, a piggy bank, or a jar with some money on the mantelpiece. So when they have no income for 3 days, they have no food. And particularly when they have children, that is a pressing need. And it's quite heartbreaking when men, women and children come to receive that food and are so grateful that the mother is able to say to the child, we've got something to eat tonight. When they were worried, they would have nothing. So it's a humbling thing to be able to be part of that distribution. The aim is not to make people dependent on a handout. It is a short-term solution. And most often, after that 3, 4, 5 day period, the benefits are sorted out. They get back payment for what they've missed. And very often, they're able to then support themselves again. But for those 3 days, they desperately need help. So that's what the food goes to, and you may or may not know that there's a basket down here for receiving such donations. Right now, I looked on the website during the week, and they were saying the particular shortage is coffee and biscuits. They use a lot of coffee and biscuits. I remember when I was first giving food into the food bank, buying tea bags and thinking, you know, because when I've been in desperate need, what I need is a cup of tea. You know, I don't know about you. I don't know what hits the spot for you. But for me, when everything's gone wrong and I'm in desperate need, a cup of tea really helps. So that's my thought, is my prayer over those tea bags, that it brings somebody some comfort in their desperate need. So I encourage you to not grow weary of doing good, not to forget that food doesn't just go in that basket and then go into the landfill. It does actually go to real people in real need. Again, because I've been part of distributing it, you may look around Burwell and say, well, there's no real need in Burwell. Let me assure you that there will be men and women living amongst us in this village that face that situation. At this very moment, there will be people in the village that need food to get them through the next couple of days. And that's a genuine need. So I'd encourage you to not forget that ministry and to continue to donate to that ministry. The second illustration is from further afield. Again, you can't really have lived in Britain over the last 12 months and not heard anything about migrants, refugees, asylum seekers. You know, if you've not heard of any of that, talk to me afterwards. But you will have heard vast amounts of political opinion about what should be happening in Calais and what we should be doing and all kinds of stuff. I will not venture into that political fray. But I'm going to point you towards what is a clear and pressing need, which is the refugees that are in Lebanon, that have come out of Syria and gone into Lebanon. And they're largely forgotten by the media. But huge numbers, particularly of Christian refugees, have left Syria and gone to Lebanon because Lebanon has many Christians. And because the people of Lebanon have been refugees. They know what it is to flee from war. And now they are opening their hearts to their brothers and sisters coming from Syria. They've got virtually nothing. But what they've got, they're sharing with their brothers and sisters. This video is about those that are in the refugee camps in Syria. So just hear from perhaps a different perspective to what the news has been showing you, an insight as to what's been going on. Okay. Andrew might give you a hand with just getting the video. It doesn't matter if it's the one with subtitles or not, really. Either way, we'll be fine.